We're on page 16 of your notes. And number two, there is beauty in nature. There certainly needs no proof here either of beauty. Only the senseless clod sees no beauty in nature. It's everywhere apparent. God gave unto us something that is in his own nature infinitely, and that's aesthetic taste. That love for beauty of color and of proportion. So that it is only natural for us to appreciate beauty wherever we see it. We certainly don't have to prove it, that there's beauty in nature. The very arrangement of the berger, and it's wrongly spelled in your notes, it's not B-E-R-T, it's B-E-R-D-U-R-E. The very arrangement of the berger of the earth, the landscape, the waterfall, the sunset, the sweep of the ocean, the beauty of the flower. Beauty is everywhere. Which makes us ask, what is beauty? Since each person seems to have a little bit different conception of beauty. For instance, a Ubangi thinks a woman with a saucer in her under lip is pretty. The only person who can drink a cup of coffee without having a cup is throw her head back. The Dyaks in Borneo thought a man with a bone through his nose was pretty. Handsome rascal. Look at that big bone he's got there. I imagine some of these young gals think these boys with that beautiful multicolored mohawk hairdo is pretty. And he thinks her with a shirt tail hanging out and multi-dyed breeches and all the rest is pretty. You see, taste varies with different people. They used to say the only taste is in their mouth. Voltaire once said to a toad, what is beauty? He said, a female toad with two pop eyes, a wide mouth, a yellow belly, and a spotted back. I even imagine to a skunk, another one smells good. But what is beauty? Well, in thinking about it, I came up with two criteria of beauty, our appreciation of beauty. And it all depends, I remember, as the old statement is, and I believe it, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. As to what they think is beautiful. One fellow said, I'm glad everybody doesn't feel like I do because everybody would want my wife. And his friend said, I'm glad everybody doesn't feel like I do because nobody would have her. They used to say he's got a face that only a mother could love. Or some foolish woman. I have seen some awful, awful ugly men and they have the cutest wives you ever saw in your life. And she thinks he is absolutely a living end. And I know he's the end. But what is beauty? First, it's twofold. First, it's a sense of pleasure in color harmony. We all have this. That's why we love the sunset, the hues of a flower. God has painted all of nature with beautiful blendings of color. And the aesthetic person gets enjoyment out of that kind of beauty. Color. Now, this is not surrealistic art. Which I wonder when they say it is not supposed to represent anything, it's the state of my mind. And I look at the picture and I wonder if I had a mind like that, I wouldn't put it on paper. Crazy looking outfit. It looks like that finger painting of a 2-year-old. And they call it art, and they pay $1 million for it sometimes, especially if it's a Picasso or some other Dolly or somebody else like that who makes a female with one eye in the middle of her head and a shape like a rag doll. And they call it art. But there is in every human heart a love of color blended brightly. I don't have too much of it. I have to ask my wife which tie to wear sometimes. I say, well, this tie match. I don't know if this one, I think this goes with this all right. I came out one time with a striped outfit with a checkered suit. And she took one look at me and gasped. I said, well, I'll go change it. I knew exactly what the problem was. I don't have much color choice in me. But I do appreciate a sunset or a flower. I've never seen this before. The woman next door has a night blooming cirrus. I had a night blooming cirrus in my yard, but it's only a small flower. This is a great big thing like this, and it's called Babe in the Manger. You ever see one? It's absolutely exquisite, and the design on it. It sort of looks like a little crater right inside of it. And then there's if you have a lot of imagination. It looks like a baby in the cradle. I've never seen a baby look like that. But that's the first thing, is color harmony. But then, second, a sense of proportion. Of some idea of proportion we have in our soul. A harmony of proportion. We've already seen that everybody has this sense of harmony. We don't like inharmonious sheet of music. If somebody hits the wrong key all of a sudden, it may be the lost key, but it should have stayed that way. Or they think, well, it's a sense of proportion, even though it may not agree with everybody else. But nevertheless, it's the one we've got. This is really beauty. And usually a blending of both. But this can only be the result of design. The same God who evidently loves aesthetically color and proportion, harmony. For instance, heaven is a place of music. The Bible mentions it all the way through. Harps in heaven. Angels singing. It isn't an accident that almost everybody likes music of some kind or another or other. We love harmony. It soothes us. I like Gray's poem on the same idea. It goes like this. Full many a gem of purest ray serene, the dark unfathomed caves of ocean there. Full many a flower is born to blush unseen, and waste its sweetness on the desert air. Where man's never been, there's beauty. They had a geographic special one afternoon late on public broadcasting system. And it was on the desert of East Africa. There, not far from Mozambique. and it was a desolate place. Then it showed, all of a sudden in the afternoon, a great big thunderstorm came. A real gully washer. And the narrator said, it wasn't but an hour or two later when little green sprouts began to come up all over the place. And the next morning, there were flowers. And then within about another 24 hours, he said, and he saw, I saw a picture of it. The whole body was carpeted with it. Turned that desert place into a place of exquisite beauty. And yet it was practically an inaccessible place in that great desert of East Africa. Our God is a God of beauty, of aesthetic beauty. And He put within us an appreciation of the beautiful, the harmonious. Why? If there isn't any God. Where do we get this kind of a taste? An animal doesn't have it. You never in your life saw an animal out there gazing in rapture at the sunset. And if he's gazing at a flower, he's probably licking his chops. He's going to eat it in a minute. You don't have any appreciation of a flower. And he doesn't pick a mate because she's got a cute, turned-up nose. Evolution would make it serve a natural selection. I never knew an animal in my life to choose a mate because they got pretty feathers. An old rooster doesn't go up to a hen and say, you've got the prettiest beak of any female I ever saw. That doesn't make any difference. Now, one more very briefly, and then we want to go to our lesson for today. There's harmony in nature. I want to cover this whole thing if I can. There's harmony in nature. There isn't a scientist on the face of the earth in every branch worth his salt and his honest who doesn't have to admit that nature is not a hodgepodge. We shall see this in the teleological argument also. Nature is not a hodgepodge of disjointed, unmatched, odd shapes. Nature is a one harmonious whole. Here's why they call it law, system, adaptation. There is a delicate balance and poising and counterpoising in nature of all properties. Now, most of the illustrations I give will be outside of your notes, since I have more than I can possibly get in the time. But you should read your notes before the next lesson. Science recognizes the presence of beautiful design, harmony, poise, balancing, but they attribute it to some senseless law rather than to God. So Dr. Robert Morrell, or March it should be, M-A-R-C-H, of the Wisconsin physicist, said before 600 scientists from all over the world gathering in Batavia, Illinois, October 24, 1977, recorded in the Associated Press. He titled it, The Mystery of Beginning. Then he attributed it to the Big Bang. He said the moment all matter was created, by a bang, in other words. Now listen to what else he says. if the electron differed by as little as one part per million. Now that's a pretty small part. If the electron in all the atoms varied one part in a million from its current nature, life could not exist on Earth. Now remember, all this came from an explosion. A big bang. A blow-up. How? There hadn't been a person on the face of the earth saw an explosion that brought any kind of order like this on Earth. And balance. All bodies upon the face of the earth, in every atom of matter on the earth, from the planet to the stellar universe, unite in chemical and mechanical combinations, but also of separation. They have their mechanical combinations, but also of separation. They have their magnetic and their diamagnetic powers, electrical attractions and repulsions. Yet all of nature is sustained by the harmonious adaptations of these proportions. I have time getting my tongue straight today. Let me illustrate. This is not in your notes. Well, let me give you Faraday's first in your notes, and then we'll go back. Yes? No. That's the wrong word. Yes, it would be wrong. He didn't. But then I realized the question you're asking, I was answering it in the wrong way. The fact of the matter is, not only does the Bible teach differently, it has God forming it, using the word yatsar, for a specific purpose. We shall use that text a little later. He formed it to be inhabited. He created not tohu. Yes. They make the whole thing, though, allegorical. They don't pay attention to language. Let me read Faraday's excellent quotation here from his book, Lectures on Non-Metallic Elements, page 290 and 291. Dr. Michael Faraday, world-renowned physicist, discoverer of electromagnetic induction. He's the father of every electric motor. I don't care what it is. He discovered the whole principle of the electric motor. And he was a sincere Christian. A beautiful Christian. We've already had that before in apologetics. But I want you to see what he has to say here, and you can't beat that today. No science today can beat his statement. Quotation marks, you can follow it. The world with its ponderable constituents, dead and living, is made up of natural elements endowed with nicely balanced affections, and forces. These three words. Drawings, desire to unite with others, attractions and forces. Elements the most diverse, of tendencies the most opposed, of powers the most varied, some so inert that to a casual observer they would almost seem to count for nothing in the grand resultant of forces. Some, on the other hand, endowed with qualities so violent that they would seem to threaten the stability of creation. Yet when scrutinized more narrowly and examined with relationship to the parts they're destined to fulfill, are found to be accorded with one great scheme of harmonious adaptation. The powers of not one element can be modified without destroying at once the balance of harmonies and involving in ruin the economy of the world. End of quotation. And I say in your notes, this is not a teacher of Christian apologetics. This is one of the greatest of the original science, of modern science. Founder of so much. Edison is credited with so many discoveries, really was developing what Faraday taught about 100 years ago. It is impossible to imagine the almost infinite balance and counterbalance in nature. And yet nature is harmonious. Not discordant. Not disruptive. Oh, we have hurricanes, we have earthquakes, but these are serving a divine purpose. They're also a sign of the fall. An evidence of the fall. But even they follow laws. Absolute laws. For instance, a thunderstorm. We shall see later. When we come to the whole law of physics in dealing with natural phenomena, in dealing with teleology. I do want to quote some physics here. The impossibility of the nicety of combinations and balance happening by accident. Blind force. Unintelligent laws. I borrowed this illustration from the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission report for July 1949. Quotation marks. Carbon is a constituent of all living things. The nucleus of the carbon atom has first 6 units of positive electricity. Positive electricity. Whirling about, the nucleus, around this nucleus, forming an outer shell, are 6 electrons. These are neutrons, these inner ones. Around this nucleus revolve these electrons, each bearing 1 unit of negative electricity. This neutralizes and balances the positive electricity of the nucleus, the neutron. 6 positive, 6 negative in every atom of carbon. Negative, 6 negative and 6 positive, electrically balancing and neutralizing each other. So the whole thing doesn't blow apart or collapse. Where it wouldn't be worth anything. Living things use these neutral atoms to build protein molecules in every living organism. But always an equally balanced molecule, so that each molecule of the live living body is positive and negative. Now, here is the remarkable thing. I want you to notice in this report. In the rapid and continuous processes of life, in the building up and the breaking down of the tissues of life, replacement of nutriments and removing of waste, production of muscular energy, and reproduction of the whole organism, these complex living molecules break up and recombine in a million ways. Yet always, they combine in ways that preserve their electrical balance. Now here it is. To destroy that balance of 6 negative and 6 positive charges of electricity, to destroy that balance would damage or kill the living material. And he says, continuing the quotation, this is what all artificial radiation does. Radiation attacks, disrupts, and destroys the delicate electrical-chemical balance in the atom. Molecules and proteins in combination within the bodies of the living things. Now note, Continuing the quotation, in nature, God has so balanced nature so that not too much sun or radiation, but man is working the balance with his nuclear fusion and fission in all kinds of harmful radiation. As too many X-rays and harmful electrical rays, like the leaking microwave oven. Then he goes on. And I put in at the close and the aerosol can at first where they used the neon gas in it. And so the government forbade it and they were tearing up the ozone layer. We'll have more to say about the ozone layer as we go along in our illustrations. We'll have something to say about the atom, more about it in the balancing of it, following the law of gravity. Every atom of matter in the universe attracts every other atom of matter in the universe, in the mega universe. It may be so weak that there's no way you can measure it, but it's being attracted with Einstein's great theory of relativity, one element of it. Elementary substances, this is not in your notes, cannot be combined in just any proportion as you please. All the ratio of combination is fixed inexorably. Every chemist knows this. To illustrate, 23 ounces of sodium will exactly combine with 35 and 5/10 ounces of chlorine to make table salt. You can't change that. 23 ounces of sodium will exactly tonight combine with 35 and 5/10 ounces of chlorine. If you take 23 and 5/10 ounces of sodium and 35 of sodium and then 23 ounces of chlorine, they won't mix. They will gradually work out until the exact combination combines and then they'll throw away the rest. I got that out of the book on religion and chemistry, page 288. Let me read this article. William B. Cannon, Harvard biologist, calls the internal balances of the human body homeostasis. He invented the term. Homeo, H-O-M-E-O-S-T-A-S-I-S, homeostasis. And I quote, "It is a marvelously delicate business, balancing in the body, embracing as it does all the glandular systems with the secretions of hormones, enzymes, acids, in well-nigh infinite complexity." And then he illustrates, for instance, this balancing that to maintain an exact temperature despite extremes externally. Then he says there are 1,001 illustrations chemically in the human body. Take sugar and glycogen. G-L-Y-C-O-G-E-N, glycogen. In the circulatory system. It has to be maintained exactly, as every diabetic knows. Or if there is too much sugar, a comatose state, coma will come, diabetic coma, and death. If too little, you have hypoglycemia, and death results. Disorientation first, and then if nothing's done, any person who suffers from hypoglycemia has to carry along some sugar pills of some kind to get an immediate relief in order to try to strike the balance. And, of course, that hurry up and take the medication that tries to balance this whole thing by the pancreas. This is true of every chemical thing in the body, in every part of the body. There's always a complete balance between one thing and another. The body's always trying to keep the temperature inside even, no matter what the outside is. It's got a dozen different ways of doing it. Keeping the right equilibrium. Look at the automatic stepping up of breathing after a strenuous exercise. Here the excess carbon dioxide in the blood is automatically increase the rate of the heartbeat and the lung action. And so the right amount of oxygen is restored. The body is one great big automatic machine. All you do is feed into it and it takes care of the rest of it. If you feed the right stuff, get healthy every other way. Or unless something goes wrong. You and I are walking on the razor edge of life. And you can tell it, at least no thing. All of a sudden, it's kind of, the authorized version isn't exactly accurate on that body of our humiliation, but it is a humiliating body. When a germ you can't see can knock you gala wampus. Look at on page 18. Most of this I took out of Dr. Charles Tyndall, who was our teacher in science and the Bible when I was a student at Trinity College. He's a tremendous man. He also was a scientist in his own right, recognized in the Scientific Association of America. He's also a precious Christian. On page 18, beginning with the second paragraph. How few stop to realize that what a tenuous hold man has on life here on Earth? If Earth was as close to the sun as Mercury, 36 million miles, it'd be so hot that every last bit of moisture on the Earth would boil, including the blood in your veins. But if it were as far away as Neptune, 2,800 miles away, the temperature would be at least 200 degrees below zero. And if on Venus, it would be 900 degrees. In 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit. Some of them can live in a volcano. I was reading about it in Reader's Digest here a little while back. I didn't cut it out and pay attention to it. It takes but a very small change in the balance of environment to make life untenable. Isaiah 45:18 is a tremendous verse of scripture. I use it a lot. And it gives you the right explanation how come the balance there. Why is the earth just 93 mean million miles away from the sun? Why is the earth tilted just 23 degrees on its axis? So we have seasons. About two-thirds of the earth would be untenable if the earth was straight up and down, squared with the rays of the sun. Both ends, but not just that, but even the median zones would be untenable. Whereas the equator would be too hot. Look at Isaiah tells you why. 45:18. For thus saith Jehovah that created the heavens, and God himself that formed the earth. Here's Bera created, and Yatsar he fashioned it. And always carries the idea for a purpose. Yatsar always carries the idea for a purpose. And then he tells you what it is. He hath established it, fixed its laws to run rightly. He created it not in vain. And the word is tohu. Same word in Genesis 1:2. And the earth became Sohu and Vabohu. It became so, not from the creative fingers of God, but when man sinned. He didn't create it that way. This text is against the young earth theory, by the way. I've heard them try to explain this. Morris has one little place where he tried to explain it, but he didn't do a very good job of it. I know it. All three of these words, this verbal inspiration, bara, asad, and yatsu, they're very distinct words. They don't mean the same thing at all. It's so remarkable that he uses bara for only living creatures and the original creation out of nothing in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God bara, created. Then all the living creatures upon the earth, he uses created. Then for man, he uses created. But of course, he has to use asad and yatsa for man because he did. It shows you how. He took the dust of the ground and formed or fashioned a body for man. And he did a good job of it. A lot better than a monkey could ever do. Notice he created not Tohu, but he fashioned it to be inhabited. That's all. That's why the whole thing runs. Even in its fallen state, it works. I'm not worried about the sun not coming up tomorrow morning. The world is suddenly coming to an end. God's still in control. You know, it's a great thing to be a Christian. It must be awful to have the awful outlook that these unsaved people have. It didn't come from anything, and it didn't go anywhere. And any reason to be living on the earth at all. It's no wonder when the least little thing goes wrong, they kill themselves. You know, there's a lot of suicides among doctors and scientists and educated people. That old mountain man, hillbilly, or that old farmer hadn't got time to get worried about things, and he doesn't commit suicide. He just keeps plugging along, even if he's unsaved. But men's hearts failing for fear, looking upon the things of the earth, that's what education does for you. You can learn to worry all over the earth. You don't just worry about your local situation. You can worry about the Chinese and the Japanese and the Russians Japanese everybody. Look at this motion in the air necessary to sustain life is just right. Why did God put 71% of the earth's surface water? Scientists have worked it out that the moisture in the atmosphere and the composition of the atmosphere would be untenable if it were not for this 71% water. As soon as they look at a planet and don't see any water on it, they know there's nobody living there. Even before they hold it. They're not looking for man there, by the way, on any of our planets now. Not a one of them is fit for life. Except this one. They know that. The two nearer the sun's not fit for a thing in the world. Then the next one down to us on the way out is not worth anything. There's only one out of all the planets and the planetoids and the asteroids and all the rest going around our sun. Not one of them is fit to live on except this one. Why is it just right? Why is the gravitational pull of 15 pounds per square inch just right to live on it? They found out it'd be pretty rough to live on a planet the size of the moon. You take a step and the first thing you know, you're 15 feet in the air. You gotta learn to walk. The gravitation is too light for the weight of the body. But if you lived on one of the bigger planets, you'd weigh, somebody figured about 91,000 tons if you lived on a planet somewhat like Cyrus B. You'd weigh too much. Yes? Yes? It's the They don't like us to say this. They say, well, that's egotistical, that this earth was made for us. And well, it's egotistical to think that even God loves me. And he loved me 100,000 billion years ago. He didn't learn to love me just after I was born. In his infinite mind, he already knew me and all about me. He even knew I'd accept his son. That's why I was chosen in Christ before the foundation of the world. Now, that's not unconditional election, we should say. It's God's absolute foreknowledge. Are you important to God? His son died for you. You can't be any more important than that. When I get to feeling small and insignificant, and why does God want to put up with me? I begin to think, well, Christ died for me. And I'm not my own. I'm bought with a price. I belong to him. I don't know what in the world he ever saw in me. And I don't know why he wants me. But I know this. He loves me infinitely. Notice this balance. There's just the right amount of atmosphere. I'm crossing over a lot of territory here. As you read it, you'll get the whole thing. The earth is just exactly the right amount of distance from the sun in its elliptical orbit around the sun, around 180 million miles. It's just right. Of course, diameter. Its tipping is just right. Its rotation is just right. We'll look at the speed a little later. The atmosphere is just right. These figures I give you are from Dr. Charles Tyndall, and I notice they haven't changed it a whole lot. The atmosphere of the earth, girding it like a blanket, making a thin sheath for man, consists of, in tons, 3 quadrillion 994,592,925,000 tons of nitrogen. That's all of it. Oxygen, 1,233,010,020,000,000 tons. And so on of carbonic acid and water. Making the atmosphere weigh 5.25 quadrillion tons. I didn't check on that to see if he's right. We'll give you a little later how he said how he counted the grains of sand on all the seashores of the earth. I took his word for that, too. I'll tell you how he did it. I could just see him going around 1, 2, 3, 4. How does God keep the tons of oxygen just right on the earth? By chlorophyll. Without it, there'd be no life on earth at all. It's the green stuff. Everywhere you see green stuff. Except maybe some Irishman. I'm talking about living things. Well, he's living too, but he's not green, actually. He wears green. But every living green thing is showing chlorophyll. Every animal puts out carbon dioxide and breathes in oxygen. Every green living thing breathes in carbon dioxide and breathes out oxygen. Now man is trying to mess up the works with his internal combustion engine. Here's another reason why I think the coming of the Lord can't be too far away. Man's messing up his whole environment. We gave you in your notes the belt of ozone out there about 55 miles out. I used to say 1,500 miles, but they say now, I think they're accurate too, about 55 miles out. Man is ruining that by shooting the rockets through it. He's ruining it by his neon gas. And Freon, both, he's putting out. Every refrigeration thing, those things have all got it in there, and naturally, someday it's going to go back in the atmosphere, and it goes on up and gets in the ozone belt. ozone has a different amount of molecules than the air down here on Earth. And it makes it lighter, so it goes up to that place. Man is ruining the atmosphere with all the carbon dioxide he's putting into it, the other oxides. 4 or 5 of them in the exhaust of every internal combustion engine. Coming to the Lord must not be far away. This layer of ozone, you'll find it on page 19 of your notes. I'm not going to give it, but I want to give you one nut in your notes in the closing. I take this from William Bell Dawson. Be sure and get his books. His son also is an excellent writer. But William Bell Dawson, in his Forethought in Creation, page 14, he was no mean scientist. He was an M.D. also, but he was a doctor in science and a fellow of the Royal Society of Scientists of Great Britain and a laureate of the Academy of Science in France, ETC. He had more degrees than the thermometer. Here's quotation marks. We may almost say that the more chemistry and mineralogy we know, the more puzzled we are about the oxygen in the air. For all the more common rocks of the world contain a large proportion of oxygen. It makes up nearly half their weight. True granite, sandstone, limestone, other minerals, as well as sand and clay. The wonder of it is that, this way it concludes, the wonder of it is that time all the oxygen in everything else on Earth, if there'd be any debris left. But if we didn't have 71% water on the Earth, we wouldn't have the right kind of oxygen to live in. If the waters of the Earth were down only a fraction, we wouldn't have enough free oxygen to breathe. Is it an accident that you get such balance in everything it is? I don't care where you look. Let me say it here, I'll say it later. The embarrassment is not trying to find some illustrations. It's knowing what to give and what to leave out. I thought at one time I would write another set of notes completely separate from these and put the ones not in here in that one and give you both of them. I love to read them. Every time I see an illustration, I don't care who writes it. I say, well, this old boy's missing the boat completely. He ought to see the beautiful balance here, symmetry and harmony and beauty. Genesis 1:1 is still the greatest scientific statement the world's ever seen. You're dismissed.